Thank you for downloading today's podcast from the newsroom of the Boston Globe. Here's a look at today's top stories.
Hello, I'm Eileen McElhaney Woods from the Globe's Night Copy Desk. The Boston Foundation and city officials are preparing to flood a 1.5 square mile section of the city with massive crime-fighting resources over the next 6 years, the Globe's Maria Kramer reports. The program would target about 2,000 young criminals believed to be behind more than three-quarters of the city's violence. The $26 million effort, which will be formally announced later this month, will dispatch 25 new street workers into five neighborhoods along or near Blue Hill Avenue to connect with gang members and try to defuse conflicts. Unlike street workers hired by the city, these so-called violence interrupters will not be disqualified if they have a criminal past. A criminal background, community leaders say, could deepen their understanding of what drives people to crime and give the workers more credibility with young people caught up in the violence. The street workers, who have yet to be hired, would be clustered in areas of Roxbury, the South End, and Dorchester. When the financial meltdown rattled Wall Street, there Lawrence Summers was, poised, prepared, and ready for his comeback, the Globe's Tracy Jan and Keith O'Brien report. The former Treasury Secretary and one-time Harvard President has not only been advising Barack Obama about how to handle the financial crisis, according to one senior Obama aide, but he has worked his way into the inner circle of economic gurus. And with the candidate's victory came a presidential appointment for Summers, director of the National Economic Council. The position, with a West Wing office, is one that seemed unlikely just a few years ago, given the controversy that Summers generated during his brief and troubled stint as Harvard's president. When in 2005 he suggested that women lacked the same intrinsic aptitude for science as men, Summers opened a path for his eventual ouster. In the months after resigning the post, Summers slipped off the radar screen, remaining on the faculty as a professor while living a relatively quiet life in Brookline. But the always opinionated and sometimes controversial Summers did not stay quiet for long. He returned to his strength, economics. He began writing a much-read column for the Financial Times. He identified the problems of a changing global economy and laid out solutions. He gave lectures around the world, hobnobbing with international finance ministers and corporate executives. Plenty have praised the president-elect for Summers' appointment, including high-profile women like Wendy Kopp, chief executive and founder of Teach for America. But Summers has had his critics. Believing that Obama was preparing to nominate him for Treasury Secretary last month, some women's groups lined up to fight the fallen Harvard president all over again. Obama sidestepped this potential controversy by naming Summers director of the council, a position that does not require Senate confirmation. As he sat in a Miami jail yesterday on the eve of his sentencing for murder, former FBI agent John J. Connolly Jr. revealed that fugitive gangster James Whitey Bulger called him twice after fleeing Boston and discussed the possibility of surrendering, the Globe's Shelley Murphy reports. Connolly matter-of-factly made the disclosure that some years after he retired from the FBI in 1990, he had shared two prearranged phone calls with the fugitive. Connolly said he could not recall the date of the calls, but believed they were in 1995 or 96, when Bulger and his sidekick, Stephen the Rifleman Flemmy, were facing racketeering, extortion, gambling, and drug trafficking charges, but had yet to be publicly revealed as longtime FBI informants and charged with 19 murders between them. Connolly said he first talked with Bulger when he went to a payphone near his office at the Prudential Center, after one of the mobster's close associates, Kevin J. Weeks, told him that someone wanted to talk to him. When the telephone rang, Connolly said he picked it up expecting to hear Flemmy, who was in jail awaiting trial, and was shocked to hear an angry Bulger on the line. During the 10-minute call, Bulger was outraged that he was indicted on gambling and loan-sharking charges because he believed that the FBI had authorized him and Flemmy to commit such crimes in exchange for the information they provided about the local mafia. Bulger spoke of surrendering, but said he did not want to turn himself in unless he was assured that he and Flemmy would both be released on bail. Connolly told him he did not think that would be possible. During the second call, arranged for about a week later, Connolly recommended several lawyers to Bulger. Connolly said it was the last time he spoke to the gangster. He said good luck, and I said good luck to you, and that was it. All too often, the congested roads of Greater Boston conspire with the vagaries of childbirth to leave a mother-to-be in a car on the roadside at one of life's most critical moments. A hard-bitten state trooper shows up and morphs into a highway midwife, clearing the newborn's nose and mouth, cutting the cord, and sometimes even saving a life. This, the Globe's Stephanie Eberts reports, is not one of those stories. Jennifer Davis was stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic on November 18th, her contractions just 3 minutes apart. Her husband John was trying to appear calm for his wife's sake, driving in the breakdown lane of Route 2. They pulled up behind a state trooper to ask whether they could continue using the lane to reach the next exit. Not only did the trooper say no, he gave them a $100 citation for driving in the breakdown lane, made them wait for their citation while he finished writing someone else's ticket, and even seemed to ask for proof of pregnancy, Jennifer Davis said. Charlotte Jane was born in Mount Auburn Hospital in Cambridge about 5 hours after the traffic stop. A state police spokesman declined to comment on the merits of this stop, but noted that state law prohibits driving in breakdown lanes on Route 2. The trooper who gave the citation could not be reached for comment. After spending more than $300 million and providing thousands of foot soldiers to help elect Barack Obama, labor unions look forward to good economic times, a warm relationship with the president for the first time in 8 years, and quick passage of measures designed to boost membership, the Globe's Michael Cranish reports. But instead of being able to call in their chits for having helped elect Obama, labor union leaders are facing an array of crises, including layoffs, bankruptcies, contract concessions, and rising costs for health care and other services. Yesterday, the United Auto Workers Union announced it would consider making new concessions in its labor contracts, a move that could lead to similar demands on other unions. The UAW's leader is slated to appear on Capitol Hill today alongside executives of the nation's three largest automakers, joining with the companies to ask Congress to approve $34 billion in loans they say could buy time to restructure and stave off bankruptcy. Union leaders say they are particularly grateful that the president-elect appears to be focusing his economic stimulus plan on creating jobs and has expressed general support for helping automakers, though Obama declined yesterday to endorse their recovery plans until after the congressional hearings today and tomorrow. In sports, the Celtics outpaced the Indiana Pacers 114-96 at TD Bank North Garden for their 10th consecutive win.
That's a summary of today's top stories from the Boston Globe. For a closer look, pick up today's paper or go to boston.com/globe.